She had been attracted to the arrogant Irian warlord prince, who had shown some respect for her skills. Attracted enough to let her heart as well as her body get tangled up with him. But the Falinar she'd first known wasn't the same man as the one staring at her now. She wouldn't have slept with this man, unless she was planning to drive a knife between his ribs while he came. She assessed him as a client, as prey. A man could hide his true nature, and true feelings, for only so long, and she was finally seeing what desperation and ambition had hidden for almost 2 years. Falinar hadn't changed because living in the Shadow Realm had soured him somehow. He'd just gotten comfortable enough to slip back into being what he had been before coming to Kalir.
"I'm trying to remember that you're not tainted," she said quietly.
"What?"
"You survived the purge 2 years ago, so whatever corruption is in you didn't come from your association with Prithian or Dorothea or Hecata. Maybe it's simply what you are because you're an Irian Aristo."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"Don't you?"
She set her coffee aside and leaned on the bar, looking friendly and vulnerable. She was neither.
"It must have pissed you off when you came strutting into the hunting camp as a boy and realized there was a half-breed bastard there who was stronger and better than anything you could ever be. He should have groveled in front of you, grateful to lick your boots. Instead, he looked you in the eyes and not only told you he was better than all of you, he showed you he was better. Must have choked you to have to compete with him and never win. At least not fairly."
"I never cheated in a competition," Falinar snarled.
"No, you probably didn't. But that doesn't mean you weren't pleased when someone else did something that pushed the odds in your favor."
She leaned a little more, showing more cleavage, and watched the way his eyes lingered a moment too long.
"You finished your training and were no longer in Yaslana's shadow because he defied Prithian and ended up being a slave controlled by a ring of obedience, while you ended up an Aristo male moving in court circles, serving a bitch you hated, but you were always careful not to step too close to a line that might be seen as a challenge. And there was Lucivar, who, despite being a slave, was always crossing those lines and growing into the most lethal and feared warrior in the realm of Tyriel."
She felt pressure on her first inner barrier, not an actual attempt to force open the first level of her mind, more like someone leaning against a door to push it open just a crack and find out what was on the other side while claiming that he didn't do anything. A man could find out a lot of useful information while not doing anything. And maybe, because it was a passive move, it wouldn't be considered a breach of the Blood's code of honor. She usually wore her birthright green jewels, just like today. But she no longer hid the fact that the gray was her jewel of rank. Had he forgotten that? Was he actually hoping that she'd be lax about maintaining the barriers that protected her mind from the rest of the Blood? Was he that much of a fool?
Skipping a few centuries, the realm of Tyriel becomes a very bad place, and people are scrambling to get away from the bitches who rule there, she continued. Among those people is an Irian warlord prince who comes from an Aristo family and has significant social standing. And wearing sapphire jewels means he is a powerful, dominant male, a leader other men obey without question. No reason to think that will change. Aristo is Aristo. Power is power.
She drifted down into the abyss until she reached the level of the gray, then drifted back up until she was under him. She reached up with one delicate psychic tendril to get the honest flavor of his emotions.
She didn't like the taste of those emotions. She didn't like them at all. Apparently, the story she was weaving around the little she knew and the lot she guessed based on knowing the two men was close to the truth. "And what happens?" she said. "You come to Kalir with your credentials polished, expecting the queens to fight over who gets the privilege of having you in her court. And there's your old friend Lucivar, already here before you. And he's not only serving the queen the rest of you would give your balls to serve, he's the ruler of the most prized bit of land in Ascavi. Not only that, he's no longer a half-breed bastard the rest of you can ignore. He comes from the most aristo family in the whole damn realm. His father and uncle are the most powerful men in the whole damn realm. Not to mention being witch's steward and master of the guard, which gives them even more status."
"Just because they acknowledged him doesn't mean he actually carries the bloodlines,"
Falinar snapped. "Blood sings to blood, and blood doesn't lie. Sure, there are generations between Lucivar and Andalvar, but he is the High Lord's son, and his mother did come from Andalvar's line. An aristo among aristos. And he still doesn't give a damn about any of that, does he? He's just who he's always been. A warrior. A leader. A strong man. Except now all the Irians who would have spit on him before have to walk softly because one word from him, one word, and that person gets tossed all the way back to Tauriel, if the fool isn't killed first."
"What does any of this have to do with him gutting Irian culture and tradition?"
Falinar shouted. "What goes on in Ebon Rhee is his version of Irian culture and tradition," she replied sweetly.
"His version?"
Falinar paced away from the bar and back.
"You can't have different versions and have the same people."
"Maybe that's the point. Maybe there needs to be a different version for the people who would otherwise be excluded from Irian culture."
"Like who?"
"Besides Lucivar? How about Endar and Dorian's little girl? A queen, but her hair has curl. Not only is she not pure Irian, that curl proves she has a bit of bloodline that isn't from any of the long-lived races. What about Tamnar? He wouldn't have had much of a future among your people, which is probably why he risked the service fair in the first place. Irian culture and tradition were already rooted here, Falinar. It's just not the same as what you left."
Falinar's mug shattered.
"Back in Ascavi, if a bitch like you spoke to me like that, I'd have you whipped."
Cyril called in a towel and tossed it on the bar to sop up the coffee.
"Bitch like me. Yes, let's address that final topic before you go. Well, two topics, really, and that's the second one. You know what none of you big, strong Irians have admitted? Except Lucivar? The man may be a pain in the ass, but he does have brains. You all came to the Shadow Realm expecting the other races to be cowed by a warrior race. Because that's what the Irians are, aren't they? Warriors, bred and trained. But no one was cowed by Irians because, in Kalir, you are not the race that is feared."
Cyril slowly reached up and hooked her long black hair behind one delicately pointed ear.
"They are called the Dia Alman, the children of the wood. They know as much about fighting as you do, maybe more, since they have always followed the old ways of the blood. Which brings us to the last topic, my bloodlines."
"You have no bloodlines."
Falinar's voice was harsh, and his hands were clenched.
"On my sire's side, you're probably right."
"You have no connection to the Saw Diablos beyond what they give you."
That's true, too. I don't have one drop of blood in common with Lucivar or Damon or the High Lord. I only used that name when I came to Kalir as a way to spit in Dorothea Saw Diablo's face. But the High Lord decided to let that claim stand and accepted me as family. So you're correct that calling myself a Saw Diablo doesn't give me the right to call myself Aristo. My mother, on the other hand. She brushed her finger over the curve of her ear. My mother was a Dia Alman queen and Black Widow. If she hadn't been broken by Dorothea's son and then murdered by one of the bitch's assassins, she could have been the queen of the Dia Alman's territory. As it was, when she made the transition to Demon Dead, she became the queen of the Harpies. So no matter how you turn it, my mother's bloodline is more than Aristo enough to make up for any lack by the cock and balls who sired me. She straightened up and stared at him across a slab of wood that either of them could destroy in a heartbeat. She vanished her green jewel and called in her gray, then gave him a moment to remember just whom he'd been trying to play with. My mother and I skinned my father and hung him up as meat for the hellhounds while he was still alive. We soaked in a hot spring and listened to him scream while they fed. So I think I come by my interest in, and skill with, a knife honestly. Don't you? He backed away from her, backed all the way to the door. She waited until he flew away before she used craft to turn the physical lock. Then she added a green lock on the door. She cleaned up the coffee and broken mug, relieved that Briggs must have some kind of shield on the wood to keep it from being damaged by spills. Then, having made her decision, she sent a gray psychic thread to a black mind. Sadi.
Surreal.
Are you busy?
That depends on what you want.
She heard the amusement in his voice and rolled her eyes. Maybe it was better if he felt amused. I'd like you to find out what you can about Falinar's bloodlines.
Cold now shivered along that psychic thread. Why?
He asked too softly. I have a suspicion that one of the things that bothers him the most about Lucivar, and now me, is the realization that we come from families that are far more Aristo than his. And I'm curious why that matters so much.
If you want this to stay between the two of us, it will take a couple of days. You know what Lucivar is like when he has to deal with paperwork, and I think this particular deluge is going to test his self-control. Besides, Father and I promised to work up a rough draft of a contract for serving the Warlord Prince of Ebon Rhee. Yes, she knew what Lucivar was like. A tiger with a sore paw was more agreeable than Yaslana confronted with a stack of paperwork. It can wait. She broke the link and went back to preparing the tavern for business. A few minutes later, Rinier tapped on the door. He had two loaves of sweet and spice bread to serve with the soup, along with some pastries, just for her. Pushing Falinar to the back of her mind, she spent the rest of the day listening to gossip and working with a man whose company she enjoyed.
Chapter 6. It was late afternoon on the following day when Falinar walked into Kolvar's workshop to have a private meeting with the men he considered the core group of Irian males living around Riada. They nodded a greeting, but no one shifted to attention, ready to take an assignment from him. Had they already heard he'd been stripped of his position as second in command?
"We need to talk about what we want for ourselves and the Irian people before Yaslana makes any other decisions for us,"
Falinar said.
"Already know what I want," Halivar replied.
That's why I gave him my hand yesterday.
We all did, Hrothvar said, tipping his head to indicate the men present.
You signed a contract with him?
Thalinar said, made too off balance by the news to hide his anger.
Don't have the paper yet, but we will, Halivar said. We can change our minds if we don't like the final terms, but from what he said, we'll still have the Ares we've made our homes, and a quarterly wage drawn from Lucivar's share of the tithes, and work that suits us.
The way Yaslana rules this valley, Zarinar said, studying Thalinar.
Why does it chew your ass?
Because we weren't born to be tame, Thalinar shouted. He expects us to be content with training exercises instead of meeting an enemy. By the time he's through gutting the heart out of what we are, we'll be nothing but Demlins with wings. Look what he's doing to Endar. A teacher?
Kolvar wiped the knife he'd been sharpening on the whetstone and picked up the next one.
Why not? It's the work Endar wants to do. And here there's no shame in being a teacher at his age. You're a Risto, and Aristos get more schooling than the rest of us. If Lucivar is willing to let all Irian youngsters have more schooling than we got, let them have it. Especially if it's something all the other children in this realm are getting.
But it belongs to the Aristos, Thalinar thought. It's the difference between a good leader on a battlefield and a ruler.
Hrothvar fanned his wings, then closed them.
I spilled my share of blood on plenty of killing fields. I've been in fights where I've killed friends who were on the other side of a line just because some bitch queen needed the sight of slaughter in order to come. There was no honor in that bloodshed. I'm not against fighting or killing. I was trained to do both, and I've done both. But I won't feel cheated if most days I hone my skills against another man for the fun of it and don't have to spill blood for someone else's pleasure.
Thalinar stared at the warlord guard.
Hrothvar couldn't mean that. You're willing to accept that?
Hrothvar shrugged. I guess it's different for you, not having any court intrigues to deal with. But for us, this life isn't so different from what we left.
Except it's better, Zarinar said.
Halivar nodded in agreement.
I'd like to have a few more youngsters to train. Hell's fire. I'd even give another try at training a few of the women. I don't have to wonder if following Lucivar's orders will soil my honor, and I sleep easier knowing that, Zarinar said.
And with Lucivar, you don't have to wonder whether the person giving you an order will deny it later, especially if there was something dirty about the job, and leave you to be the one to take the punishment. Hrothvar's expression made it clear that he'd known men who weren't whole afterward, even if they survived the punishment.
Lucivar says what he means and means what he says, Halivar said. Straight words, straight work. Guarding Rylanders,
Thalinar sneered. Zarinar made a crude, angry sound.
Some of us are willing to do the work we agreed to do, and that includes protecting the Rylander villages, Blood and Landon. I heard there was a Jinka raid on a Landon village a few weeks ago, and it was the Rylander guards from Agio who stepped in and drove the bastards off. The Irians in the northern camps should have been patrolling that part of the valley and should have spotted the Jinka before they reached that village. But they couldn't stir themselves to raise a bow, let alone shoot a single arrow. I won't blame Lucivar a bit if he tosses every one of those lazy sons of whoring bitches out of the valley. The Rylanders aren't used to dealing with Irians, Thalinar argued. If they showed the proper respect, they'd get the help they need.
Oh, they're used to dealing with Irians, Hrothvar said. Just not in daylight. Hrothvar Yaslana and a hand-picked troop of men used to patrol the northern part of Ebon Rhi, as well as the sleeping dragons at the end of the Calderon Run. The Queen's court might have had more contact with Prothfar himself, but the Irians who served him were known to the blood in Agio, at least to some degree. First time I walked into a tavern there, it was late afternoon, and the owner looked confused to see me. Then he offered me a glass of Yarborough. Apparently, Lord Yaslana and his men stopped by there on occasion, so the man kept bottles of the blood wine on hand. Falinar swallowed his growing disgust. Hrothvar and Zarinar were the best fighters among the warlords Lucivar had brought to Ebon Rhi. They should be troop leaders, controlling their own portion of the valley, with men under their command. He ignored the memories of how many men were killed or maimed in fights that started because a troop leader needed to expand his territory and increase his income in order to pay his gambling debts. Then he focused on the knives Kolvar was sharpening and no longer tried to swallow his disgust.
"Hell's fire, Kolvar! You made some of the finest weapons in Ascavi, and now you're sharpening kitchen knives? These blades get dull like any other," Kolvar replied as he studied the edge of the knife. "Doesn't hurt my pride to give the women some help. And who would know better than me how to put an edge on a blade?" "What about your reputation?" Falinar demanded. "You're a weapons maker. This is menial work. Who did Lucivar have doing it before you?"
"No one. He did it himself."
And that lack of understanding, of distance, was the reason Lucivar had no business ruling anything, let alone a prime territory like Ebon Rhi.
"You been up to the women's settlement at Down?" Zarinar asked.
Lucivar had made it clear that no man who wanted to keep his balls went to the settlement without his permission. Kolvar shrugged.
"Lucivar came by not long ago and asked if I wanted to go with him. I wasn't busy, so why not? And I was curious."
He looked a little uncomfortable, but he also looked amused.
"The man walked in, took a look around, and started scolding the women for hauling things that were too big for them to handle instead of waiting for him to help. And a couple of the women started scrapping right back, saying they had brains and craft and plenty of hands and didn't need a penis in order to get things done."
An uneasy silence. Then Hrothvar asked, "What did he do to them?" Kolvar laughed.
"He grinned and went to check the woodpiles and other things he wanted to check. Later, he told me, one of the women who'd been scrapping with him had come to Kalir this past summer, and she'd been so afraid of men, she would puke from fear when he walked into the room. He said it was good to see her growing her backbone and heart. Anyway, we ended up in the kitchen drinking coffee. Then he called in his whetstone and started sharpening the knives. I wasn't going to sit there like a fool, was I? So I gave him a hand. Most of the females were keeping to the far end of the room, but the boys were hugging the table, watching him while they answered his questions, and asked plenty of their own. He slapped down a boy with nothing but a look when that boy tried to bully the one girl who got brave enough to approach the table. When he was done with the last knife, Lucivar took all the children outside for a flying lesson."
Kolvar vanished his own whetstone and the kitchen knives. Then he looked at Halivar.
"There isn't a youngster in that settlement who would be old enough for a hunting camp, but there are some there who are old enough to start learning what you can teach. You should talk to Lucivar about going with him the next time he visits."
"I think I will," Halivar replied.
Falinar listened to them a few minutes more, then made an excuse to leave. They didn't see the truth about their future, didn't understand how a leader who was so common he didn't see anything wrong with taking care of menial tasks would diminish the standing of all Irians in Kalir. These men belonged to Lucivar, and for the time being, there was nothing he could do about that. So he was going to have to look to the men in the northern camps for the help he needed to save all of them. Cyril dropped from the green wind and landed lightly in the courtyard of Lucivar's aerie. If she'd been polite, she would have used the landing web and climbed the stairs to the courtyard. But she wasn't feeling polite, since she was the messenger who had to hand over this basket. Mary woke up this morning feeling hungry and well, and had been cooking and baking since sunrise. The goodies in the basket were her thanks for the pot of soup Marion had made yesterday.
"This is payment and more for a pot of soup," Cyril grumbled as she banged on the door. "And I deserve these goodies as much as anyone."
Especially after the dream that had ripped through her sleep last night. The boy Trist, torn and bloody as he'd been in the spooky house, smiling at her and saying over and over,
"The worst is still to come."
Maybe it was just lack of sleep, or maybe it was something more that made the floor and walls of her room seem to rise and fall this morning, and made her chest hurt in a different way. Maybe she should stop and see one of Riada's healers before going back to the tavern. Maybe... The door swung open. Lucivar looked edgy, heading toward pissed off, and he was wearing the heavy wool cape he used as a winter coat. Wishing she'd just left the basket, she started to step back when he reached out, grabbed her coat, and hauled her inside.
"Some of this has to go in the cold box until you're ready to eat," Cyril said, trying to hand him the basket.
"Fine."
He hustled her into the kitchen and put the basket on the table. Then his hands clamped down on her shoulders, holding her in place.
"Marion is in the village running errands. Falinar needs to talk to me. He says it's urgent. I need you to stay here and watch Daemonar."
"No."
30 minutes, an hour at the most. Tassel and Graves Fang are on their way back here, so you won't be alone with the boy for long."
Her heart banged against her chest so hard she could barely hear him.
"Lucivar, I can't do this."
"Yes, you can. Just sit and read him stories. He loves that, and he's housebroken, so you don't have to worry about changing diapers."
He couldn't pay her enough to change a diaper.
"I have to go."
Lucivar gave her a smacking kiss on the forehead and was moving toward the door, saying,
"Daemonar, I'll be back soon."
Little feet running, the sound of small boots smacking on a stone floor as Daemonar raced into the large front room.
"Papa, I want to go with you."
"Not today, boyo. Play nice with your Auntie Cyril."
Lucivar looked at her.
1 hour.
He was outside and flying off before she reached the door.
"Lucivar!"
6 shivers. Feverish heat. Too damn hard to breathe. She closed the door and turned around. Daemonar gave her the sweetest smile. She hadn't been alone with a child since that night in the spooky house. Had made sure she was never alone with a child. But maybe this wouldn't be too bad. After all, this was Lucivar's home, not a place that had been designed as a trap to kill members of the family. And he'd promised he'd be back in an hour. She slipped out of her coat and hung it on the coat tree near the door.
"You want to play a game, Auntie Shrell?"
Daemonar asked, following her into the kitchen.
"All right."
Her heart gave her chest another kick.
"Let me put this food away first, and then we can play a game."
Steak pie, vegetable casserole, a small jar of chopped fruit to be served over sweet biscuits. She put everything but the biscuits in the cold box. Leaving those on the table, she set the basket on the counter and looked around.
"Daemonar?"
A little boy giggle.
"Come find me, Auntie Shrell. Come find me."
"No."
She crept toward the archway that led to the large front room.
"Daemonar?"
The patter of small boots on stone. She moved fast, following the sound. The aerie was a warren of rooms, but the boy should be easy enough to find. It wasn't like he was being quiet. Then there was no sound, none at all.
Daemonar?
She headed for the bedrooms, then heard from behind her,
"Come find me!"
And the sound of feet running back toward the kitchen. She dashed back to the kitchen and took a quick look under the table. It would be easy enough for a boy his size to dart between the chairs and hide. No little boy under the table. So damn hard to breathe. Had she drunk her healing brew this afternoon? Couldn't remember. She moved through the rooms, searching. Sometimes she heard a giggle, sometimes the scrape of boot on stone.
The worst is still to come.
The bad things hadn't happened yet. She had time to find the boy, Lucivar's little boy. Couldn't let him get hurt by twisted bitches or lethally honed blades. Couldn't let the bad things happen to him. Not to Lucivar's boy.
The worst is still to come.
She opened a cupboard and saw serving bowls, platters, and other kinds of dishes, and heard a boy screaming and screaming and screaming. Then the screaming stopped, and she knew what that meant.
Come find me.
Was that Daemonar saying that? Or Trist?
The worst is still to come.
Her breath hitched, rasped in her chest, hurting her as she tried to draw in enough air to think, to move, to act. This time she wouldn't fail. She would find the boy and get him out of this damn house. And she would find a way to get Marjane out of that tree before the crows took the girl's eyes and... She dashed into the front room and glanced at the door.
Kester! No!
A flashed image, as if a sight shield had dropped for a heartbeat. Just enough time for her to see the wings and the blood spraying everywhere as the Irian bastard ripped into the boy. Then gone.
Kester, not Daemonar.
Like Trist, Kester had died in the spooky house. She still had a chance to save Daemonar. She tore through the bedrooms, opening every door and drawer she could find. She tore through the weapons room and Marion's workroom and the laundry room, circling back to the kitchen where she yanked out drawers and opened more doors. She opened the cold box, then the door to the freeze box inside it, and stared at the little brown hand so freshly severed the fingers were still curling up against the cold. She bolted across the kitchen, just reaching the sink before she vomited. Then she stumbled out of the kitchen, stumbled around the airy, hearing Daemonar's voice, sounding scared now, saying,
"Auntie Shrell?"
Couldn't save him. Couldn't save any of them. Not Trist, not Kester, not even Renier, not Janelle. Hadn't been good enough, strong enough, fast enough to save them.
"Auntie Shrell?"
And now the boy. Lucivar shouldn't have trusted her with his precious boy. She stumbled, hit a carpeted floor on her hands and knees, and went all the way down. Tears and pain and poison. This time the poison would take her all the way down. This time she wouldn't fight it.
"Would you like some coffee?"
Thalinar asked. Lucivar undid the buttons and belt on his winter cape, but didn't take it off.
"No, thanks. I left Cyril alone with Daemonar, and I promised I would be back as soon as I could. And I don't want to drink whatever you're offering."
A month ago, he wouldn't have thought twice about accepting food or drink at Falinar's Aerie. When had that changed? And why? They'd always respected each other's fighting ability, and not liked each other much for anything else. That hadn't changed. And while some of Falinar's ideas about the Irians here had pissed him off, he wasn't concerned, because he made the final decisions in Ebon Rhee.
"We need more Aristos living here to balance out the Irians who have common skills, to balance out our society,"
Falinar said.
"We should have another healer. We should have a priestess. If some of the Irians will be leaving Ebon Rhee, bringing in others wouldn't swell the numbers beyond what you're willing to allow here. and Aristo families would bring their own wealth, so they wouldn't be a burden on your purse.
Lucivar studied the other warlord prince and wished he felt easy enough to accept that cup of coffee.
I would be willing to consider Irians who have other skills to offer the community, whether they come from Aristo families or not.
Thalinar looked puzzled.
Skills? Healer? Priestess? Craftsman? Tailor? Seamstress? Although a couple of the women in the Down settlement might be taking care of that last one.
I don't think you understand, Thalinar said.
I meant Aristos. They don't need to work. They do if they want to live in Ebon Re,
Lucivar replied.
There isn't an adult living in this valley who doesn't have some kind of work, and anyone who isn't willing to agree to that doesn't belong here. The queens and the rest of Ascavi might feel differently, but I don't see any reason for anyone to sit around idle, no matter who they are or what bloodlines they can claim.
You can't expect an Aristo to stoop to menial labor, Thalinar protested.
I didn't say they would have to clean the horseshit off the streets. I just said that if they want to come to Kalir and live in Ebon Re, they have to be willing to do some kind of work that will benefit the Irian community at the very least.
Lucivar continued to study Thalinar.
Is there someone in particular you want living here? A friend? Family? Is that what this is about?
No. It's not about someone in particular. It's about a whole level of Irian society that is missing. Can't you feel that?
Thalinar's voice rang with frustration. Lucivar huffed out a sigh.
No, I can't feel that. I never saw that part of Irian life. And the little time I spent around Irian courts before I was sent away from Ascavi didn't impress me. And neither did the Aristos in those courts. Whatever you think is missing, I never experienced it, so I don't feel the loss.
That's the point, Lucivar. You don't know what the rest of us are missing.
He heard the passion in Thalinar's voice and the conviction, but Halivar, Kolvar, and the other men willing to voice an opinion hadn't given him any indication that something was lacking.
Maybe Damon or Father can tell me why this is so important to him. Write up a report that explains what you think we need. Maybe we can find a way to bring some of that into the community.
Did Thalinar understand how much of a concession he was making by offering to read a damn report? Apparently not. Judging by the resignation he saw in Thalinar's eyes, what he was offering was nowhere near what the other man wanted.
Maybe you should go back to Ascavi Tiriel,
he said quietly.
There must be some Irian Aristos who survived the Purge. Maybe you'll find life there more to your liking now. I think it's clear to both of us that whatever you were hoping to find by emigrating doesn't exist in the Shadow Realm. At least, not the way you hoped.
Are you forcing me back to Tiriel?
Thalinar asked.
I didn't say that. We rub against each other. Perhaps I should take command of the northern camps. That would give us both some breathing room.
Something floated in the air between them, something subtle, almost hidden. When he'd been a slave and couldn't trust anything about the queen who controlled him or anyone in her court, he survived because he never ignored what instincts couldn't shape into words. He wasn't going to ignore his instincts now.
I didn't renew any of the contracts of the men from the northern camps,
Lucivar said.
I'm giving them a few extra days to pack their gear, but after that, they are barred from Ebon Re.
Thalinar looked shocked.
You let all of them go? Who's going to patrol that end of the valley?
Hrothvar, Zarinar, and the other Riata Irians will have to stretch out a bit and work with the Agio Master of the Guard. Rylanders aren't the same caliber of fighter as an Irian, and you know it.
Yes, I do,
But the Irians in those camps didn't do a damn thing when they were needed, and proved to Agio's queen, her master of the guard, and me, that they aren't needed here, or wanted here. They stared at each other.
There's nothing more to say,
Falinar said.
No, I don't think there is.
Lucivar turned and walked out of the airy. Unless he had ebon gray shields already in place, it was the last time Falinar would see his back.
Falinar poured the coffee down the sink and carefully rinsed the pot. The spelled liquid he'd added to the coffee wasn't a true violation of the Blood's Code of Honor. It was too mild to be considered a compulsion spell, but adding it to food or drink helped make a person more open to suggestions. He'd taken a lot of risks in order to buy those vials of liquid from a Black Widow. In the decades since then, he'd used the liquid carefully, slipping a few drops into a glass of wine or ale when there was a real chance that his words would make a difference, when that added something would help him influence people into making the right decisions. He'd used that influence to temper a punishment when a man didn't deserve to be punished at all. He'd used the liquid to stop perversions that would have harmed common Irians as well as Aristos. That had to count for something. But he'd used too much of the liquid when, at his father's demand, he tried to save his older brother from a punishment the fool had deserved. The change in the Master of the Guard's chosen method of discipline had been too pronounced. No one had suspected Falinar of causing that change, but the discovery that someone had tried to manipulate the Queen's master had thrown the lady into a rage. The new punishment had gone beyond cruel. Falinar, his father, and their other male relatives had been required not only to witness the punishment, but to participate in order to retain the family's social standing and their own status in the courts where they served. When it was done, the queen let what was left of his brother live and sent him back to the family. And that had been the cruelest punishment of all. His father couldn't publicly blame him without bringing attention to himself. But neither of his parents forgave him for what had happened to the favored son, and his mother deliberately began closing social doors, leaving him vulnerable to the whims of Prithian and the most elite members of the High Priestess's court. The service fair had offered him a way to escape his family in Tyriel, but it hadn't given him a way to regain his standing in Irian society because there was no Irian society. He accepted invitations for social events held by Riada's Aristos, but it wasn't the same. He wasn't someone among the people who mattered. There was nothing left for him in Ascavi Tyriel. What he needed, he would have to build here. Since his effort to influence Lucivar had failed, he had no other choice except to eliminate the obstacle that stood in his way. Lucivar opened the front door of his airy and smelled vomit. Shit, he thought, as he used craft to remove the winter cape. Had Cyril come down with that stomach illness? He didn't have time to wonder, didn't even have time to turn and hang up the cape. The wolf pups rushed him, so panicked their attempts to communicate were completely incoherent. Then Tassel appeared and...
Papa! I'm sorry, Papa. I'm sorry.
He heard Daemonar's voice, heard the slap of boots on stone, felt the change in air as something launched at him. As he dropped the cape and reached out, he formed a skin-tight ebon-gray shield around himself. His hand filled with fabric, and in the heartbeat he had to decide whether to shove something away or pull it close, he realized he'd grabbed Daemonar and pulled his boy close. Little arms wrapped around his neck in a chokehold.
I'm sorry.
Mother Night, when had Daemonar learned to create a sight shield? He was much too young for that level of craft. "Sorry, sorry, sorry," the wolf pups wailed on a psychic spear thread. That probably explained how the boy had learned it.
"Okay, boyo," he said soothingly. "What are you sorry about?"
From the smell of him, the boy had wet his pants, proving he wasn't as housebroken as Lucivar had thought.
"I broke Auntie Srell."
Lucivar's legs went out from under him. He sank to his knees, clutching his son, trying to make sense of the words. He looked at Tassel. "Graysfang is with her. She will not hear us, Yas. She cries like she is being torn up in a trap. But we cannot smell a wound."
"Sweet darkness, have mercy."
He pried Daemonar off him.
"Listen to me, boyo. You have to drop the sight shield."
"I don't know how,"
Daemonar wailed.
"All right. Tassel will help you. You stay with him. I have to help Auntie Surreal. Stay here, Daemonar."
He whistled sharply as he headed toward the family's rooms. Graysfang howled in reply. He found Surreal in the parlor on the floor, crying in a way that went beyond simple pain. He dropped to his knees and gathered her in his arms.
"Surreal! Surreal! It's Lucivar! You're all right now. You're all right."
"He's just a little boy,"
she screamed, feebly beating on his chest.
"How could you leave me with a little boy?"
"I'm sorry. I didn't realize..."
What? That she wasn't easy around children? That she'd been fine playing with Daemonar at Windsull as long as Marion or Janelle was also there? But she'd joined the adults the moment she was the only one with the boy? He just hadn't considered why she'd responded that way. Her breathing wasn't good. It sounded like she'd torn something in her chest.
"I couldn't save them," she whimpered.
He cuddled her because it was the only thing he could do at that moment.
"Surreal."
Words poured out of her. Names that made him sick just to hear them. Marjane, Rebecca, and Miral, Danny, Rose. He knew those names. How could he not? He'd heard them whenever Janelle had nightmares about a place called Briarwood. Trist, Kester, Ginger, the children who had died in the spooky house. He held on to her, not sure she knew she wasn't alone. When Marion suddenly appeared in the parlor doorway, he said,
"Get Nurian, and Father."
Late enough in the day for Satan to be awake, and he wanted the strongest Black Widow available to examine Surreal. Words poured out with a pain he couldn't imagine. How had she kept this inside her for so long? She stopped speaking in mid-word, and he hoped that she was finally aware that he was there, that he would help. She sagged in his arms, and there was a sudden and terrible silence. Chapter 7. Lucivar paced the length of the Ares' large front room, back and forth, back and forth. The parlor would have been warmer, but not more comfortable. Not while he could taste Surreal's pain in the air and imagined he still heard the echoes of her crying. Needing the movement, he continued pacing and kept an eye on Daemon, who had taken a position at the glass doors and done nothing but stare at the snow that had been trampled by Daemonar and the wolf pups over the past few days. Too silent and too still. Lucivar found this side of Daemon's temper the most frightening, because there was no way to gauge the ferocity hiding under passivity, or how that temper would show itself when the passive surface broke.
"It wasn't Daemonar's fault," Lucivar said, "or the wolf pups. They were playing a game. They didn't know..." "Hell's fire.
Who could have known Cyril would react by tearing the area apart and scaring the youngster so badly the wolf pups forgot how to drop the sight shield? Damon turned away from the glass doors, his gold eyes changing from blank to annoyed. Of course it wasn't their fault. They're just children.
If you're going to blame someone, blame me.
Damon's annoyance held a sharper edge. For what? Lucivar stopped pacing and faced his brother.
She didn't want to stay with the boy. Not by herself. But Damon, I swear by the jewels and all that I am, I didn't realize she was afraid to stay with the boy.
None of us realized that. She wasn't troubled being around him when we were all at the keep for Windsol.
Because we were there. She wasn't responsible for keeping him safe, for keeping him alive.
Lucivar started pacing again.
Before she collapsed, she kept talking about the dead children, how she couldn't save them.
That answers the question of what's been eating at her these past few weeks, Damon said, his voice bleak and angry.
I can understand her feeling raw about the children who died in the spooky house, but she's been shouldering the weight of children who were dead before she knew they existed.
Satan walked into the room. Lucivar pivoted and Damon moved with him. When they stopped, they stood shoulder to shoulder as they faced the High Lord.
Nurian says there is nothing physically wrong with Cyril,
Satan said.
Wasn't she listening to Cyril breathe?
Lucivar snapped.
If she's that incompetent, I'll kick her ass out of Ebon Rhee. There's nothing wrong with Nurian's skill as a healer,
Satan snapped back.
But if you need to kick someone's ass, kick your own for not considering the condition of Cyril's lungs when you insisted she spend several weeks in the mountains during deep winter.
Lucivar rocked back, hurt by the verbal slap. Satan huffed out a sigh and held up a hand.
If Janelle had thought being here now would harm Cyril's health, Cyril would not be here. Right now, her breathing is raspy, and she probably will have a wicked bitch of a sore throat from the crying and screaming. And she has scrapes and bruises. But those things are understandable. Hell's fire. She went through every drawer, cupboard, and closet searching for the boy. The darkness only knows what she thought she saw in the kitchen that led to the collapse. And that is the point. There is no physical reason for the way she collapsed after Lucivar found her.
Bleeding in the brain? Damon asked.
No.
Nurian found nothing, Damon said. What about you? Satan shook his head.
She's not in the Twisted Kingdom. Of that I am certain. But she's gone somewhere inside herself, and I don't know where to begin to look, which is why Janelle is on her way. I think Witch is the only one who can help Cyril now. And if Witch can't help her,
Lucivar thought,
I'll stay with Cyril until Janelle arrives.
Satan continued,
Nurian is checking Daemonar. Marion is going to keep him in his room until things are calmer. Tassel and Gravesfang have taken the pups back to the wolf den and their mother.
He looked at Damon.
What about you?
Cyril asked me to look for some information in the keep's library. Damon replied. I'll take care of it, so she'll have it when she wakes up.
If she wakes up,
Lucivar thought. They were all thinking it. And not one of them would say it. Is there anything concerning the Irians that needs to be dealt with right now? Damon asked. Lucivar shook his head.
There is nothing that can't wait.
Including making the decision about whether he could allow Thalinar to remain in Ebon Rhee. He waited until Damon left the Eyry, and Satan returned to the guest room where Cyril drifted in that unnatural sleep. Then he put on his winter cape and went outside, needing the sharp, cold air. Wasn't anyone's fault. Not the boys, not the wolf pups, not even his. But if Cyril didn't recover, Her loss would leave scars on all of them. Damon glided through the stone corridors of the keep until he reached the room that held the dark altar, one of the 13 gates between the realms. He picked up a kindling stick, then used craft to create a tongue of witchfire. Once the kindling stick was burning, he extinguished the witchfire and began lighting the four black candles that would open the gate and take him from the keep in Kalir to the keep in Tyriel, which was where he needed to go in order to find the information about Thalinar that Cyril wanted. An empty shell. That was what he'd seen before Satan pushed him out of the guest room and told him to wait with Lucivar. Nothing but an empty shell. He'd held an empty shell once before. He'd lain beside Janelle's bloody husk while the sadist tricked Witch into leaving the misty place and rising high enough in the abyss so that he could force her to heal the young body that had been violently raped. Now it was surreal that Satan was trying to coax back into the body she had abandoned. The first time he saw surreal, she had been 10 years old, big eyes and long legs, ready to bolt because she'd already learned that men were the enemy. But she'd had enough steel in her spine to stay beside her mother, Titian, while he listened to Teresa's request to help the woman and her daughter. Pretty girl all those years ago. Beautiful woman now. And she still had steel in her spine. Would it be enough this time? And what would it do to the boy if his Auntie Cyril never recovered from what should have been an innocent game?
Sweet darkness, for Daemonar's sake and for her own, let Cyril come back to us,
he whispered as he lit the last candle in the four-branched candelabra and blew out the kindling stick. The wall behind the dark altar changed to mist, and Damon walked through the gate. 4 steps. That was all it took to move from one realm to another. 4 steps. The moment he took that last step and walked into the other dark altar's room, he knew something wasn't right. He'd been in the Tyriel Keep's altar room, and it didn't look like this. This room was rougher, smaller, colder. Leaving the room, Damon called in his heavy winter coat and put it on while he glided through the corridors to the doorway that should lead him to one of the courtyards. Too dark. Too cold. Not enough candlelights in the wall braces, not for this part of the keep. And the air smelled different. He found the door and went out to the courtyard that would give him a view of Ebonry, or the Black Valley, as it was called in Tyriel. Twilight. That wasn't right. There had still been daylight when he'd returned to the keep from Lucivar's Aerie. There were lights in the valley, indicating a gathering of people, but he wasn't sensing enough people down there to populate a village. Of course, the witch storm 2 years ago had devastated the Blood's population in Tyriel, so maybe it wasn't surprising to sense so few minds. But that explanation, while valid, didn't feel right. It was winter here, as it should be, but there was an underlying cold that had nothing to do with the season, as if this place never felt the sun. When he finally focused on the plants growing around the courtyard walls, he realized he'd never seen anything like them before. There were 3 realms, and the black candles were lit in a specific order to open the gate to a specific realm. He'd been thinking about Cyril, distracted by the fear that she might not recover, and he'd opened the gate without paying attention to the order in which he'd lit the black candles. Mother Night, he whispered, looking out over the valley. This is hell. Renier laid out the cards for a solitary game and watched a middle-aged warlord approach the bar. Briggs kept his eyes on the stranger, giving the man no reason to look at anyone else in the room. Renier nodded, silent permission for Briggs to notice him and bring him to the warlord's attention. A few moments later, the warlord approached the table.
"I'm Lord Randall,"